podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello and welcome to the Wisdom of Early Ashes podcast, sponsored by Travel Bag, creating a base packed full of exciting memories since 1979. England, having bowled Australia out for 179 on an off and on topsy-turvy day one, are decidedly on top. Jofra Archer was once again the star, taking the first of presumably 100 or so Test 5 wicket hauls to reduce Australia from 136 for 2 to 179 all out. I'm your host, Ben Gardner, and I'm joined for the very first time by a special guest, Jared Kimber. Cricket writer, broadcaster, data analyst, general manager, you name it. Jared, where did it all go wrong for the Aussies?
Where did it go wrong for sure? Well, I mean, it's overcast conditions and they're in England, so I probably went wrong when they got on the plane and they were going to get pitches like this. I think actually a lot of things went right for them. They didn't get any edges early on. Mm-hmm. I thought England bowled dreadfully at one stage. Yeah. There was that point on Twitter where everyone said England had lost the Ashes for about an hour. Which shows you how poor they had bowled. So I just don't think Australia are suited to wickets like this, and especially against, you know, Broad and Jofra. And to be honest, if Wokes had bowled as good as he usually does, Australia might not have made 86, let alone 179.
Yeah. Do you think it is one of those scores that could end up being sort of half competitive? Is it not a test match and going to rack up 400 in a defining lead, or what do you think?
It's interesting. If anything like this tomorrow, then I think 179 could end up being a handy score. I think you're right, but it's not supposed to be like this tomorrow. It's supposed to be sunnier. Yeah. Generally, at Leeds, when it's sunny, that's a problem. So I suppose we have to wait and see what the weather's going to be like. But it shouldn't be enough. It should be at the very least 80 to 100 runs behind where England should score. But you could have Pattinson who could run through them, or, you know, or Hazelwood, and things could change. But realistically, I don't want to be in a situation where we start going 179 is enough in Test cricket, but the way that teams are batting, I don't know, maybe it is.
Yeah, okay. And there was that, as you said, there was that stage with that one partnership between Warner and Labuschagne when batting did look okay for a second. And it was when the sun was out. So do you think it's mostly, is it really the overhead conditions rather than the pitch, or is it just a patch where England just bowled badly and they made it look good, or what was it?
I think if you look back at the cricket data, that early on I thought they bowled very well and they didn't get the wickets they went for, and I think the natural thing there is to start chasing the wickets, and I think that Wokes maybe less so. I think maybe he just didn't find his rhythm, but I think Ben Stokes certainly looked like he was chasing wickets. And this is a weird ground because it's a ground where you can take a lot of wickets, but you also, it's quite small and quite square, the wicket, you can score quite quickly. Mm-hmm. And I think they were chasing, bowling maybe the wrong lengths, and Australia pounced on that. And maybe you're right. Maybe the sun did come out a bit more then. It's hard to remember. I don't remember having seen the sun today. but I wasn't always looking up, although I was looking up most of the day. But I think that the main thing was in that period that England didn't bowl well enough. If they just stayed in the channel just outside off stump and kept the ball there, I don't think there would have been a partnership like that.
Yeah, okay. So obviously Warner made runs today. Didn't look convincing all the time, I guess it's fair to say. Do you think... I mean, I guess in the World Cup, he sort of did the same thing where he made scratchy runs at first and then was back in form. Do you think this is the same thing, or do you think there's an issue with him batting in England where he still doesn't have a Test 100? What do you think is going wrong or is starting to go right there?
I mean, most interestingly is that you've waited for Davey to get on the bus before you said this. You made sure that he's safely behind you. He was behind us a moment ago. I don't think he batted very well today. I'm not sure I've seen him bat that well. I think you're right. I think the World Cup... I asked him about it in a press conference and he got a bit tetchy. He tried to make a joke of it, but he also sent me a message later going, "Do you really think I'm not batting well?" So I think there's a certain point where he's still searching for that form he had before. But don't forget, he made a lot of runs in the IPL. Hmm. You know, so it's not like he's come from completely no form, but in the World Cup, I thought he struggled a little. He certainly struggled with Stuart Broad here. I thought today it was mostly a Stuart Broad-related thing. I actually thought he looked pretty good against the other bowlers, even Jofra, whereas I thought against Broad, he really didn't look like he was going to hit the ball. But no, look, it was a lucky innings. It's no different than the Rory Burns innings in the first test for me. On another day, you make as many mistakes as those two did, and they wouldn't have lasted 5 minutes. Some days it just goes for you. And also... You might be able to say that
Broad maybe bowled a bit too wide to him and a little bit too short. It's interesting that Broad bowled the perfect line and length to Head and got him out. I don't think we saw as many balls to Warner in the same area. So, you know, there's a lot of different factors there. But I think Warner will be happy that he's just got runs. You know, it wasn't that long ago everyone was like, will he make a run this Ashes?
Yeah.
Any runs will happen. And he is a confidence player. And, you know, but he's probably looking for some sunny days.
Yeah, okay. So let's go through a few of the talking points of the day reasonably quickly. Marcus Harris came in at the top of the order for Cameron Bancroft and made 8. Still probably the right decision, you think?
Yeah, I think he's probably the better option, especially in English conditions. I don't think Bancroft was going to make any runs. It's one of those things that Harris fails, so everyone goes, we shouldn't have made a change. But I'm pretty sure Bancroft would have failed anyway. So I think that was the right call.
Cool. And the other change was James Paterson coming for Peter Tiddle. But the form was sort of rested second test to ensure he was... The phrase they've been using is cherry ripe, which sort of makes me a bit squeamish.
Or hungry.
I think
if that's what they're going to do, I mean, they're basically thinking about it from a baseball perspective. They're trying to platoon their bowlers a little bit and bring them in when they're cherry ripe, when they're a Mars bar. I don't know. I don't understand the full phrase. But if that's the case, then it was the right decision to bring Pattinson back.
Cool. Yeah, and then looking at the end of the day, after they did break that partnership, Jofra Archer is going to do that to loads and loads of tails, isn't he?
Yeah, well, he's going to get lots of people out, isn't he? I mean, it's incredible to watch him today and bowling at 84 miles an hour. And the first thought is everyone, England broke him in the last test. They bowled him too many overs, which might be slightly true as well. But the truth is, I think he was holding himself back because he knew the conditions were in his favour.
Yeah.
That means he's not a fast bowler. That means he's a complete bowler, which just means that he's going to destroy teams in all sorts of conditions. I mean, if you've got someone who on a flat pitch can bowl, you know, 95 miles an hour and on a pitch that seems can go back and still nip it around. And now he's walking behind you, but he'll be happy to hear this. So that's okay. If you've got a bowler of that talent, you know, I'm not sure how you stop them other than injury. Because, you know, you look at someone like Sean Pollock, who probably was never quite as quick as Jofra either, but he had the ability to, you know, so when his body did start to compact a little bit, he was still really good. Glenn McGrath was slower at the end. I mean, that means that Jofra can, for maybe 5-6 years, absolutely, you know, annihilate people by hitting them in the head. And then he'll be so smart that he'll be able to get players out the other way. Those sort of bowlers don't come around that often.
Yeah, I think there's a bit of, obviously we've compared him to a lot of people, as a bit of Dale Steyn and the way he cranked up and down in the speeds. Dale Steyn, I think, has spoken about how he would pull it back when he was bowling with the new ball because there's that swing off, you don't need to be cranking up to 9 miles an hour, and then when that goes, you crank it up. And as you say, he didn't need to crank up at all today because it was always there.
It just when he got, I can't remember which wicket it was, but it was a wicket in the middle, he went up to 89.
Yeah.
So again, I think he thought something's going to happen here, and he cranked it back up, and then the ball was doing enough, and he came back down again. So I mean, that just shows a proper cricket brain. Like, you know, if Sean Tate and Shoaib Akhtar are not going to do that.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
okay. They're going to keep bowling as quick as they can, as long as they can. Whereas, you know, he's a skillful, clever bowler, and he's got a lot of different, you know, he's got great wrist position, he swings it, he can seam it, he can think batsman out, and then occasionally he can bowl at 96 miles an hour.
Yeah, okay. So we should probably talk about the one Australian who did look pretty good, which is Manus Labuschagne.
Yeah.
I guess two questions is... is he the real deal, and why didn't he start the series in the side?
Yeah, he would have started the series in my side. Interestingly, though, I'm about to say that I'm not sure he's the real deal, but I think he should have started. I think he's I think he earned the spot, and he made sense. I think that they were a bit worried about that sort of middle order area where they thought they were maybe slightly more covered. I think they thought that Head and Wade deserved the spots more than him. I think now we're looking at it, and we're probably thinking, maybe he's a better option in England than Head is. But he averages 37 in first-class cricket. I had a look. I think he averages somewhere around 30 in first-class cricket against right-arm seam bowling. You're going to face a lot of that of really good quality in Test cricket. I'm not sure where he fits into the side. He sort of has to bat 3 or 4. But he's not a great player of seam. And he's a better player of spin. But I'm not sure, because Head's going to score quite quickly when he gets in, and Wade's obviously quite attacking. That's the sort of 5 and 6s that Australia like. I worry about it, but I certainly think that today this is the best I've ever seen him bat.
Yeah.
And in conditions that probably don't suit him that much. But again, he missed a bit early on and looked like an Australian batsman playing in England in the bad ways for a little while there. So,
But it, you know, the fact that he can get a hit in the head and get hit in the penis and get hit everywhere else and still come back to it does show that there's something there. But I'm not sure we're looking at a batsman who will ever average more than 40 in Test cricket. But in modern Test cricket, maybe that's more than enough.
Yeah. Maybe take some courage to review the decision that got him out as well. I think when you're hit by a shin-high full toss and you fall over and are on all fours, you might just not want to see it again.
Well, I like that he was angry that he missed the full toss. Yeah. He was angry that he was given out, and then he seemed angry that he reviewed it at one stage. There's a lot of angst in Manus. Look, there's a couple of funny moments today. The other one was the great one where there was the four overthrows off the bat, and the England crowd started booing, and then they realised they won a World Cup with it, and like swallowed the boo midway through. Which, you know, so there was some funny cricket. Jeez, when he got hit in the balls, though, that was a painful blow. Yeah. That was only funny until it looked like he was actually hurt.
Yeah.
I remember playing with a guy once who the box split open and then split back shut, but with his manhood inside it. For a minute, I thought that might have happened to Manus.
Yeah, and Hashim Amla once had to miss a test, I think, and had to have surgery on that area after a blow. So it can be serious as well as funny.
It's 99 times out of 100 funny, because you only need a small... But what I mean, you know, it doesn't matter if you believe in God or evolution. It's a massive design flaw to have something that's that painful dangling outside your body. I mean, for cavemen, they must have been getting it caught all the time. I'm not sure if you thought that's where this podcast was going at the start, but I was always going to take it back to caveman and their testicles.
Okay, and well, let's finish on a cricket note in that case. Your predictions for tomorrow, what do you think is going to happen?
I think it is weather dependent. I think if the weather's in Australia's favour, then 179. I don't know why I keep saying 177. That was the last time I looked at the scoreboard, apparently. Yeah, yeah. I think, you know, they'll be in the game. They should be. They may not bowl them out for as cheaply, but they should be able to bowl them out for maybe 220 or something like that. But if it does get sunny and it is an easy ground to score quickly on, and Australia lose their way a little bit, then there's no reason why England couldn't score over 300. I'm not sure you can score much more than that here, but if they score 300, then they should win this test.
Yeah, I agree. I think England will score 300, and I think you're right that they will need to score that to win the test, as we saw in the first test when England got a lead of near 100 and Australia just batted them out of the game. I think when tests get shorter, third innings maybe get a bit longer and the pitch hasn't broken up by that stage, and that might be the best one to bat rather than the second innings, and so you really need a big lead if you're going to bowl first. But yeah, we'll see what happens. So thanks Jared very much for joining me for the first time. You'll hear again tomorrow and the day after if we get that far. This has been the Wisden Daily Ashes podcast, sponsored by Travel Bag, creating holidays packed full of exciting memories since 1979. And if you enjoyed listening, please subscribe on the podcast app on Spotify, anywhere else you can find, and tell your friends.
Social Podcast Network.